Okay, we're going to study the ninth chapter of the book of Revelation this morning. Ninth chapter. In order to grasp a lot of what we're going to be looking at, I think it's important to remind ourselves of the focus of God in Scripture. We've actually spent a little bit of time talking about this. The Lord, in consideration of man's natural state, we are incapable with finite minds of comprehending infinite truth. We're just not able to do that. And so we're creatures of time and sense, and we're very limited in what we know about anything. As a matter of fact, something that occurred to me once upon a time in my life is that the intelligence of a man is not measured by what he knows. It's measured by what he does not know. If you want to really feel smart, just think a little bit about what you do not know. A lot more of that out there than there is what you know, I can tell you that. And so when you look at it that way, there's no room for pride. And we run into smart people from time to time in life. I had somebody make fun of me one time when I was a little fellow. It was at a local filling station, and there was a man there that was rather wealthy and prominent in the neighborhood, and he was a very proud man. He came across that way to me even as a young person that had, didn't have the maturity to really even understand what pride was. But it just sort of struck me that he was not like many that I knew that were humble, even though I didn't know how to use those words. I knew somehow or other inside there was a difference between pride and humility. And he asked me some mathematical question that maybe I should have known. I can't remember the details, but it had to do with math, and I didn't know, and he made fun of me because I didn't know. And so for many years growing up, I felt really inferior because there was so much I didn't know, and I knew I didn't know. And one day it dawned on me, in my adult life, that there's never really a basis for being proud, because the smartest person you may ever run into is ignorant about something. And you have people that have very important positions, people that have tremendous expertise in certain areas of life, but there are other areas of life they're totally ignorant of. Like the difference between somebody that may be a doctor, but their car breaks down, and they have no clue what's going on under the hood. No knowledge whatsoever of an automobile engine. And so the human condition is we have these little puny finite minds, and there's so much that we do not know in the face of a universe created by an infinite God who has infinite wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. And so God knows all of this. He created us the way we are with these limitations. He certainly is not the author of sin, but He created us the way we are with finite minds. And so there are a number of things that He has done to help us in view of our natural state. And we talked about this the other week. We can't grasp eternity. We cannot grasp something that has no beginning and no ending. And so God, in consideration of our natural state and not being able to comprehend something so large, he gave us a reference point, and he divided time. And so with our little minds, we can deal with that. We can really deal with that. We can deal with 2017. We can deal with the fact that tomorrow will be 2018. Our little minds can compute that, understand that, because we have a reference point. And without that reference point, we would be sort of lost. We also made mention of the fact that out of all that God created, when he created the heavens and the earth and all that's out there, the focus of God in this book that we're reading here, the Bible, is not way off out there. It's right here. It's on the earth. And so we can't really comprehend all of that that's out there because there's no end to it. But our little minds can handle the fact that this is where we are. This is where we live. We live on planet Earth. We can understand that. And so the focus of just about everything in this book that relates to man and his mind has to do with this particular location. Out of all the places in the universe, as big as it is, the focus of God is right here on earth. And in our studies, we have learned that God thinks of it with such profound significance in his thinking as it relates to you and me. He made it very clear that for all eternity to come, this was going to be his focus. It's right here on this little planet, this little speck of dirt in comparison to all the dirt that's out there, or however we might think of it. His focus is right here on planet Earth. And we learned that this is, he established his name in a nation called Israel on a piece of property with a city named Jerusalem. And he said that he would establish his name there forever. And it would be... it would focus upon a temple, which was in reality a type, a symbol, really, of himself. The temple of God is representative of the person of Christ. And so when you study the articles that were in the temple, all of those articles that were in there, all of the things that it mentions related to the temple, whether you're talking about the laver or the altar of sacrifice or the table of showbread or the Holy of Holies, whatever, the candles, it was all a picture of some aspect of the person and work of Jesus Christ here on planet Earth. Now, all of these things are important as we think about it, as it relates to an understanding of the book of the Revelation. I told you earlier that you can't really understand the book of the Revelation without some grasp of the larger picture of the entire Bible, beginning in Genesis. And so the book of the Revelation is the end of the book, and when it comes to taking any kind of course that is complicated, usually when we go to school and we're given a textbook, The harder stuff is the other end. And it's all difficult. That's why we take courses, is because we're ignorant. We go to classes not because we know already what's in the course. We go there because we do not know what is in the course. And so when we start the Bible, it's kind of like, okay, God has given us a book here. We're profoundly ignorant. But if we'll study this book and start in Genesis at the beginning, and study through and come to the revelation, we're going to find that as we get further on into the book, we can understand better the last book of the Bible if we understand some measure of what was in the previous ones. And so that's, I think it's important to notice things like that. Another thing is Bethlehem's manger. We talked a little bit about the glory of God. We talked about the fact that God is a spirit. How can we really understand a spirit? I mean, how can we understand a God that is so powerful? He could just speak and spread out the heavens, as the psalmist says, like a curtain. How could he do all that in 6 days? How could he do that? And when you start studying what we do know about the earth and the universe, we find that it's infinitely complex. If you take anything, any particular thing that's out here, if it's an insect, and you begin to look into it and to study that insect, the wisdom behind the design, even the intelligence of insects, it just goes into something that's so deep, our little minds can't even begin to comprehend it. And everything is like that. And when you look at DNA and when you look at seeds and what has to be in a seed, you know, to produce everything that you eventually see after it springs forth and grows and matures into whatever God intended it to be. It's just amazing. The complexity of a seed. And so, how can we understand a God that could do all that? And the Lord knew it. And that's why he came as a baby. And that's why it tells us in Colossians, Paul's letter to the Colossians in the 2nd chapter and 9th verse, in him, in that little babe, dwelt all the fullness of the Godhead bodily. Everything that can be known about God. Little finite minds can just look at a little baby, and there he is. All the fullness of the Godhead bodily. Now, who can't comprehend a baby? Well, we can comprehend a baby. We'll never be able to comprehend the fullness of what was in that baby, because God, in his infinite wisdom, somehow or other reduced his infiniteness to something that had boundaries to it. It had a shape. Had a shape that human eyes could see. Folks, this is what we learn when we study the Bible. Because this is in the book. That's where I learned it. It's in the Bible. We just read it, Colossians 2:9. For in him dwelleth all the fullness of Godhead bodily. There it is. Why did he come that way? Why should we not ask that question? Why did he come that way? I think it's important for us to ask that question, why did it come that way? It's the only way we could comprehend it. And so the Lord has done everything imaginable to make himself accessible so that we could approach his glory and not destroy us. The glory of God is more than we could ever handle. It would make us afraid. It would leave us without strength. We would fall before his greatness as a dead man. And some experience that very thing. And then we have the infinite mind of God. And this is amazing to me. When you follow this kind of thinking and just try to see how it might fit other things, the one that comes to mind is the Bible. The Bible. What is the Bible? It was in this church that I heard for the first time, my ears heard for the first time, that the Bible is the mind of God. The mind of God. That's huge when you think about it. That in this Bible is the mind of God. And somehow or other, God has taken his infinite wisdom and knowledge and understanding and has reduced it down to something that puny minds like ours can handle. And here it is. We have a book that has the whole mind of God in it. And that's why, in our experience, sometimes we can study a passage, say 40 years ago, and we'll learn some things in it. And maybe we spend a week or two studying a certain passage, and we think we understand something about it. Then 40 years later, we go to the same passage and read it again, and we see something else. A week later, we read it again, and we see something else we didn't see the week before. And the truth is, this book has so much of the fullness of the mind of God in it. We can study this book for all eternity, and we'll still be learning as much a billion years from now as we may have learned the first day we opened it. It's the infinite mind of God in a book. But little minds like ours can handle it. We can handle that. We can handle a book. Now, Solomon, in his wisdom, in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, he said this, "And further, by these, my son, be admonished, of making many books, there is no end." Of making many books, there is no end. "And much study is a weariness of the flesh." Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Now, this is something that we need. This is what puny minds need, is somebody to give us a conclusion. A conclusion is what you would call an answer that's right. Is man capable of arriving at a conclusion that's right? And the answer is no, he isn't. Finite minds cannot arrive at a conclusion that they know is right because the information that you have to research to make a conclusion would be infinite. And so, if you came up with a conclusion, there may be intervening variables at some later time that would completely change those conclusions because of a lack of information at the time that you came up with your conclusion. So there's only one person in the universe that can say anything conclusive about anything. And that is God, because he has an infinite mind and can infinitely research all the questions that pertain to any issue or matter. And so Solomon, in his wisdom, is here being inspired by the infinitely wise God to give us a conclusion. And the whole Bible is an answer book. It's an answer book for all the questions of man, because the human condition of man is, that's all he has, is questions. He has no answers whatsoever to anything. That's why Paul said men would be ever learning and never able to come to a knowledge of the truth, never able to come to a conclusion about anything. And so scientists today will even acknowledge in their writings that truth is elusive in that we pursue it. And so the human condition is that of the pursuit of truth. It's not the discovery of truth, because if you could discover truth, there would be something that's absolute that would be outside yourself, which would require your submitting to it. And man doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to submit to any authority outside himself. And so he'd rather be content with forever pursuing and never finding. Because the day you find is the day you find God. Because he's the only one that can say anything conclusive about anything. And so Solomon says, "Further by these, my son, be admonished of making many books. There is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man." So Solomon in his wisdom has reduced the whole of life to two simple things. Fear God. What does it mean to fear God? A person that truly fears God is a person who will sense that there is a problem, because of that word fear. Why is there fear? Because this book reveals to us, when we study this book, of all the books that could be written, we have this book, and this book teaches us that we've got a problem, and it's not God. And so when you study this book, you learn that the fear factor is not God. Not really. Because he doesn't have a problem. God is love. God is holy. God is truth. He's just. He's full of compassion. What is there to fear in someone that is truly like that? And the answer is, there is nothing to fear. That's the kind of person that you would like to have as a best friend. That's how you would like all your neighbors to be. So what then is the fear factor? It's the fact that we're not like him and do not want to be. That's the fear factor. And we need to be changed. And the whole message of the Bible is that God doesn't change. I change not. I'm the Lord. I change not. And so the message of this book, this little book that God has given us, is that we've got a problem and do not have the good sense to know it, apart from this book. Because man thinks he's good. And God says, no, you're not. There's none good. And so, what Solomon is talking about here when he says fear God, he's talking about coming to know him as your Savior from that which is your problem, that fear factor. which is your problem and mine. And if you fear God, if you fear God, and you really understand how He's using the word fear, and where the focus of the fear really is, that it's in us, because we're criminals, deserving of death because of our crimes. And so Solomon is saying the conclusion of the whole matter is you need to get saved. You need to come to know the Lord. You need to come to understand why there's a problem and why you are afraid of God. It's for reasons in ourselves that we're afraid of God. Perfect love casteth out fear, and we do not have perfect love. So the Apostle John said it. I mean, how are you going to fit in the typical understanding of fearing God in view of 1 John chapter 4? Perfect love casteth out fear. Does Jesus Christ fear the Father? No. Isn't the eternal plan of God to conform us to the image of His Son who does not fear the Father? Absolutely. Will we fear God in the eternal future? Absolutely not. Because the fear factor will be removed, and it's not in God because He doesn't change. So you just follow the logic. And you see that the fear factor is in us. It's our sin nature. And that's why the Bible is about conversion. It's about conversion. It's about being changed into His image. And so Solomon is saying the first thing is fear God, and the second thing is keep His commandments. And the reason is because that's how you prove you love Him. The whole problem with the human race was a refusal to believe God. That's why Adam and Eve died, is they did not keep His commandments. And the reason they didn't is because they loved themselves at that certain point more than they loved God. And thought they could make do without Him. And so here again, Solomon is saying, this is the conclusion of the whole matter, fear God and keep His commandments. We can handle that. That's not too big for somebody to handle. This is the simplicity that is in Christ Jesus that little puny minds can get hold of and handle. And we can be saved. And so the Bible goes on to talk about the human condition as it relates to the future. And the book of the Revelation is about the future. And what do we know about the future? And the answer is nothing. We know nothing about the future. As a matter of fact, we're so limited in what we know about the future that we do not know what is going to happen 1 second from each word that I'm currently saying. In a split second, our world could change, never to be the same again. And that's true every second of our existence on this earth. We do not know what the future is going to bring 1 second ahead of us as far as linear time is concerned. We do not know. And this is what James was talking about when he said in James chapter 4, verses 13 through 15, "Go to now, ye that say today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow." If we do not know what's going to happen on the morrow, we do not know what's going to happen 1 second ahead of each moment that we live. And that's the truth. And I think we know that. I think God has given us a thought here that little minds can handle. Because in our human experience, as we live every day, we experience this truth. And oftentimes we're just shocked. We're just disappointed at the things that happen to us that the future brings into our life. Our minds are so puny, we can't handle the future. I tell you what we can handle, if anything, if we're going to talk about it in these terms, we can handle right now. That's why man by nature lives in the moment. He lives in the now. He makes decisions without vision. In every area of life, we make decisions with no vision of the future. Why? Because it's not in our nature to think about the future. It's in our nature to want something now. I see it, I want it, I'm going to get it now. With no thought whatever about the wisdom of the choice. And that's just the way we are. A person has to get saved to even begin to think about the future. And so the book of the Revelation and the ninth chapter that we're going to be studying and looking into means nothing to a person that's not saved. Because by nature, we're not really interested in the future. We're interested in it right now. As far as the future is concerned, we're interested in how we want, what we want the future to bring us in view of what we want right now. But you can't think about the future separate from the moment. So right now, as I look at the world, this is how I'd like for it to be in the future. And that has to be tied inseparably into what we want and think right now. Because that's all we can handle. We're not big enough to handle anything bigger. And so a saved person believes God concerning the future. He takes the future to heart because God says this is what the future is going to bring. And here we are living on this planet, pursuing life. And most of everything that we pursue is how it's going to affect us in this lifetime on this planet. I marvel at times some of these advertisements trying to get people to buy death insurance. And you'll have these, you know, actors, and they use words like, when I leave, when I pass. And they never say what passing really means. They just use, what do you call them? I think the word is mitigated, a softened term. They don't use death. They use when I pass. When my time comes. When my time comes. What does that mean? There's not one hint of where they're going. In other words, my only concern with when I pass or when my time comes is, am I going to leave my children with a burden? I'm telling you that in our natural state, we can't go beyond death and where in the world it is we're going. Our thinking is entirely locked into this present world. Because it's the only thing we can conceivably handle. What happens after we die is huge. because it's forever. It's forever. And people don't want to even talk about it. And so when it comes to the future, the Lord has given us something here that's got handles on it. Because he tells us exactly what's going to happen. Exactly what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. And out of his love for us and his grace and mercy, he has given us a book that tells us something no man could possibly know had he not told us the future. Because he's the only one that knows it. He's the only one that knows it. In the universe, the only one that knows it. And so, the reason I wanted to spend this time, which has been quite a bit now at this point, building up to what we're doing, is so that we would appreciate it all the more. We've got to see how advantaged we are in having this book. Because no one else in the world that doesn't know God has a clue what tomorrow may bring. But we do. And we know in a way that is rigidly accurate. There's no possibility of error in terms of what's coming. And so we come to this ninth chapter. And let's look at verse 1. And the fifth angel sounded. Now these are the trumpets. The trumpet judgments. You know, the seal judgments were the first ones. There's seven of them. And then there's seven trumpet judgments. And then seven vial judgments. And so this is the fifth trumpet here. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. And to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And so here we are, we're reading strange things. And so the question then is who? Who is this? I saw a star fall from heaven. Was it a literal star? The Bible is full of symbolism. It's got types in it. It's got foreshadowings of future things. And so when it comes to the literal interpretation of the Bible, the only way you can tell the difference between something that is symbolic is by the context in which it's written, in which that particular issue occurs. And in our case, it's a star. And so the question is it a literal star that falls? And so if you read the verse carefully, you find out it's not a literal star because it tells you. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key out of the bottomless pit. So we find that it's a personality. It's a personality. And so what would otherwise be a totally obscure book with an obscure chapter, an obscure verse, all of a sudden begins to take on some light, some meaning. And so the question then is, who is this person? To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. Well, there are a number of passages, and this is why I say you have to know a lot about what the Bible says earlier on to understand what's going on in the last chapter, which is, and I tell you, if you go to most churches anywhere, one thing that you will find is that hardly any preachers anywhere ever preach on this book. Anywhere. You will find a few that do. But there are not many. And the reason is because most people are not going to study the Bible. Enough so that when they come to the hardest book of the Bible, they're going to have the preparation for beginning to understand it. Well, we're very fortunate in this church, because I'm telling you this, as long as I've ever been here, I have never come to a church meeting but what I didn't leave here, whoever the speaker was, that I didn't leave with something that I was glad I heard, because I didn't know it before. And so we've had an opportunity to learn as we've come here to this church, because our pastor, the leaders of this church, Brother Dan, the others of the speakers that speak, I'm telling you, if we come in here and we sit and listen, we're going to learn something we can take home with us and we can use it. And we'll find that we're actually growing in our understanding of the Bible. And now here we are in this very difficult book that very few people ever preach from because of that very thing. It is very difficult. It's the last book of the mind of God. Pretty deep. And it's also about the future, which no man naturally knows anything about whatsoever. And so if we're concerned about the future, and we should be, we ought to be laboring in this book, trying to understand it. And I'll tell you this, too. God wanted us to understand it. He did. And that's why he wrote it. And when Paul said, study to show thyself approved unto God, that included the revelation. It included that. And God inspired him to write that before the book of the Revelation was even written. But he wanted us to study. And so what can we learn about the who? The question, who is the star? If we know it's a person, because we've already seen that it is, who then is it? Well, there are a number of passages, and one of them is in the Old Testament. Well, there are actually two of them in the Old Testament. Let's look at actually the first one. Job 38, verse 7 says, and this is the oldest book in the Bible, is the book of Job. Job 38 and verse 7 says, where wast thou when I laid the foundation of the earth? God is asking Job that. Where was thou when I laid the foundation of the earth? Well, he was nowhere. He didn't exist. That's the difference between God saying to Moses, you go down there and tell Pharaoh that I am has sent me unto you. So Moses is saying, I am, is God, has sent me unto you, Pharaoh. And so, what is the significance of the name? The significance is not difficult to know at all. God has always been able to say, I am. And God is now calling this truth to mind as he addresses Job. And he says, where was thou when I laid the foundation of the earth? You couldn't say I am because you didn't exist. So what do you know about anything? Job was complaining, you know. Declare if thou hast understanding. So he's making Job feel real small here. He's bringing to his mind not what he knows, but what he doesn't know. And that's big. Who hath laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest? Or who hath stretched the line upon it, or measured it? Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened? Because he hung the moon, the sun, the stars, the earth, upon nothing. Or who hath laid the cornerstone thereof? A cornerstone is a reference point. A reference point. Job, of all that you see, do you see a reference point? A cornerstone is the first stone that is set in the blueprint of an architect. And the way it's placed is consistent with all the other measurements in the entire structure that's going to be built. Cornerstone. And so, Job, what do you know about the cornerstone? Of all that I've created, of the earth. Where was thou when I laid the foundations? When I laid the foundations of the earth, the cornerstone. Where's the cornerstone of the earth? When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. And so here we begin to see something about stars being people. Or at least persons, not people, but persons. And angels are persons. And the Lord is telling us here, when the morning stars sang together, this was not talking about literal stars that are hanging up there in the heavens. He goes on to tell us, just like in Revelation chapter 9 and verse 1, about the star falling from heaven to the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And so the way we understand the scriptures and really get a handle on it is we do not read everything as symbolic. We know that symbolism points to something else. And so right here, we see that the morning stars singing together is not literal stars singing, because it says, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. And so the stars that were singing were the sons of God. And who were the sons of God? Well, the angels. They were angels. And so we learn from the Old Testament in Job that. Now, very quickly, because our time is gone, Isaiah 14 and 12, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? He was one of the stars. And here he's seen falling down to the earth, falling down to the ground. In Luke chapter 10 and verse 18, and he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. So start putting all that together. And it begins to make sense. And then Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And so there are a number of verses in the Bible that help us understand what God is saying here in the first verse of Revelation 9. the who, the answer to the who is the devil. The devil. Our time is gone. We got to stop right here. So we'll come back next week, Lord willing, and we'll study this out. Oh, me. Julian, dismiss us, brother.
Thank you for putting the words in your mouth. Thank you.